a young person watching right now saying, hey, wait, I've got the same struggle where I'm overly nice, overly give, overly there for people, and I always feel like they're backstabbing me or I'm getting the worst end of the stick. What advice would you give to that young person?
I feel they need to be able to explore some mental exercises and workshops. So say, for example, okay, if you are put into these kind of positions, A, would you do this? B, would you do that? C, would you do that? Teenagers, I feel, need a bit of mind muscle memory to practice what they need to do in exceptional circumstances. Teens get brought up with this, sometimes these negative thoughts. It carries on, you're never good enough. You're not good enough. And why you fail school so much? There's mind, muscle, memory. I feel, and I really believe, the mind, muscle, memory is so strong that they've connected to that. And they believe in that what their parents are saying. Because who else are they going to believe? Who's going to tell them that you are good enough? The more that people isolate themselves because they're so busy with life, the more isolated they become and the more comfortable they are being isolated and they're more tepid to come to the first step. We need to make that easier.
Are we rolling? Yeah. Cool. All right, yeah. So if someone didn't know who you were, Wayne, and they asked you to introduce yourself, what would you say you are? Who's Wayne to you?
Well, I think you start with the basics, hey? Like, you know, married, father of two. That's probably a good start from who I am. And, like, you know, yeah, during my that's a very good question. That's a very deep question, actually. Who am I? Yeah, as you mentioned, I do run the Happiness Hangout, and like you know, that's where my passion is. Like, just trying to what is the Happiness Hangout? Some people do ask. So should we talk about that? Or
well, let's stay on the first question before we branch out, because Happiness Hangout is one of the things you do.
Yeah,
but who is Wayne? Because the people on the camera, they want to get to know Wayne. That's the first thing they want to get to know. Is who do we have as a speaker today before we get to understand their story and everything they're involved in and the impact they're making in the community? Who is this person in front of us?
I'm actually no one, probably. No one knows who I am. So as a person, like, you know, I've got 20 years experience as a pharmacist. I'm a dad, father of two, married, work hard. What else can I say? Yeah.
Let me flip the question so it's much easier to contextualize.
Mm.
If I said, at the end of your life, who would you like to be remembered as? It's a similar question, but on the other side.
What will be remembered as?
Yeah. You want people to think, oh, that Wayne guy. And then what?
I guess everyone knows that who actually does know me, knows me for my caring. Like, I care about others. Like, I care a lot about people. We're always trying to be nice, be the nice guy, in the sense that, you know, if anyone needs help, I'll be the first person to say yes to.
Yeah,
just trying to help everyone, really. That's a funny thing, hey. I do try to help most people and everyone, but sometimes it's actually to the detriment of myself.
You think
so? So many stories.
What makes you say that there's to the detriment of yourself?
Well, I don't know. Like, you know, just recently, like, you know, like as one of the stories is like, I have a car.
Yeah.
I've got a car that I drive day to day.
Yeah.
And I have another car that I actually do deliveries with for my business.
Yeah.
So we do party hire stuff.
Yeah.
So that car sits in my driveway, and my neighbors one day, I had a chat with the neighbours, and then the neighbour was saying to me, oh, yeah, I see the car there. Can I borrow it? Kind of stuff.
Yeah, he just asked that bluntly.
Well, no, he didn't ask for it. I shouldn't say that. I noticed that he didn't have a car.
Yeah.
And I offered the car to him.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, well, there is a car there. I don't usually use it. Maybe he can borrow it off me.
Yeah.
And just pay me like $100 a week, at least to cover the insurance kind of stuff, because the car's sitting there anyway.
Yeah.
So I did that. It was okay, like, but he always struggled with even making the first payment. Like 3 weeks later, he still hasn't paid.
$100
$100. And crazy. It got even worse. Like, you know, before you know it, I was getting these traffic fines in the mail.
Chalugo.
Long day. I was getting like, I got like a speeding fine. I got a traffic fine because of parking in the city. And it's like, bro.
So who's going to pay all for order?
I said to him, look, hey, these are the fines that you've incurred while you're driving the car.
Surely you should cover that.
And he goes, but I was delivering the furniture for you.
Nah, no way.
No.
No way.
And like, because I'm a JP, I can't get any speeding fines. So if I actually have two speeding fines within 3 years, they'll cancel my JP status. So people don't know that. Like, and that's why, like, you know, when I drive, I never speed. So I have to make sure I don't speed. Like, you know, I can't have something. I can't take ownership.
Justice of peace?
Yeah, justice of peace. So justice of peace, yeah. Like, if you sign documents, like, you're not allowed to speed. Wow. Because if you're breaking the law, what then represents your character as a JP?
Yeah.
Which sort of makes sense, and like, I acknowledge that. So I've only had like one speeding fine in 25 years.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. No, the story gets better. Actually, the story gets better.
Right, tell me more.
Okay, so then one day, like I was looking across the road, and I noticed, hang on, I wonder why he's having problems changing the tire. So I looked, I ran around to my car.
Yeah.
And he was changing the tire. The tire had popped. The wheel was smashed up, sort of like thing. Like, it wasn't drivable because it has dents everywhere. And the cover. Yes. The mud guard?
Yeah.
That was gone as well. So apparently my car sideswiped one of the barriers along the motorway.
No. This and guy was I'm probably thinking, texting and driving or something.
No. Yeah, well, I don't know, man. But when I got my car back, there were so many empty alcohol bottles.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that sort of would make more sense to me that, okay, maybe it's because he's drinking. So he doesn't remember what he does. But anyway, it cost me $300 to change the tire, get it back. He still owes me 8 weeks of things, incurred two speeding fines and one traffic infringement. And it's like, no, man, I need to push this back to you. Like, I've tried to help you. You haven't helped me one bit kind of things. No, I can't help.
So this is a tricky situation, and I can see a lot of people watching this can pretty much relate to what you're saying, because I've had somebody say to me, being a nice person is costly. It will cost you more.
It is costly. And that's just one occasion. There's more occasions than that. But, you know, let's move back to something.
No. Hold on. Let's talk about that angle first for a second. Mm. Yeah. So when is the line for boundaries?
Yes.
Would you say that there's still room to be a nice person? Because people might look at this and be like, yeah, this is why I'm never nice to anybody. Because someone might look at this video and be like, is Wayne encouraging us not to be nice, not to be kind?
Oh, no, not at all. Like, I think it's like, maybe definitely be nice. Like, the world needs niceness these days. The world needs kindness. But at what extent-wise, I think you're right in saying what boundaries there has to be. But I think it's just life learning. Like, you know, as part of my learning process with this particular situation is that, hang on, if the person is unable to even meet the weekly nominal $100 a week payment,
mm-hmm.
maybe I had to cut it off earlier as to wait till like 4 or 5 weeks and realize, hang on, I don't think he's going to be able to pay me back for it.
So when you kept it going, what were you hoping for?
I was just hoping him. I was just hoping him at least like he was able to then find a job.
Oh, he didn't have a job.
Like, I think what was happening, he was looking for, he was using the car to get to, no. So he had a job. He initially borrowed my car to go to the job.
Interview.
He worked for a couple of days, but then he had an argument with his boss.
Nah, there's signs everywhere, Wayne. Come on, man.
Well, this is the red flags.
There is signs anywhere of a bad character. Who starts a job and then 2 days later have an argument with the boss? And he probably lost that job. I don't even know the guy. But already the patterns don't sound nice, man. From someone doing you a favor to wrecking the car, to getting speeding fines, to not keeping the job.
Do you want to listen to more stories?
What else you got? There's worse than that? Have you helped people that have done worse than that?
this is an interesting story.
All right, so tell us more. No, I'm listening. Are you listening?
Yeah, okay, so Facebook, right? So Facebook sometimes, like, people would ask for help kind of stuff, like, you know. And I've always been passionate about well-being.
Correct.
So, like, in one of those cases, like, somebody messaged on one of those groups and said, yeah, it would be nice to have someone to talk to. And I said, bro, I've got you. Yeah. Anytime, just message me. I got you back. No problems. So I was typing it away, like, this reply. And I was working at the time, was in pharmacy working, and then the guy goes, yeah, let's meet up. I go, yeah, no worries. You sound like you need to have a bit of a chat. I'm up for that chat. Let's go meet up. Where shall we meet? And he goes, oh, Stone's Corner. Okay, we'll pick a restaurant and meet you around Stone's Corner.
Yeah, cool.
Which is fine. Like, you know, after work, 6 o'clock, I finish at 6, see 6:15 kind of stuff. Let's plan for that.
Yeah.
And then he messages me and says, let's meet at my place because, yeah. And I said, hold on, this is a red flag. Sometimes I can spot red flags.
Yeah.
So it's like, no. Let's meet at my place first. And I was like, no, I don't think so. I'm happy to meet you in public place. I'm not meeting you at your place for sure.
This was a guy.
And this was a guy, right?
Now he mentions his house. Yeah.
And he mentions his place. Like, nah, man, I'm not going to your place. I might not come back out the other side. Right? So, you know, it's dangerous sometimes. Like, it's like, nah. And then so I Googled his phone number, gave me his phone number.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God. Like, if you want to have a good time, call this number. And it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh man, you just reminded me of what happened to me in the States.
What? You actually had a good time?
No, man, no. Chalugo. I had a similar kind of experience.
Oh, did you?
I was at a restaurant.
It was Craigslist, was it?
I was at a restaurant eating by myself, and one guy came in and he's like, wait, what's your name? I was like, yeah, my name's Joe. He's like, where are you from? I was like, oh, Australia and stuff. And I thought he was just going to say hello and leave because I wanted my alone time and just have my dinner in peace.
Mm.
And he just ended up inviting himself into that table and just sat trying to conversate. And then it went from that to, what are you doing after this? And I was like, in my head, I was like, look, hey, maybe he's just a really friendly guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know much people in the US. Maybe he can be friends. Yeah.
Yep.
So I said to him, I'm not actually, I don't have much plans. Like, what do you have going on? And he's like, oh, I can let you know. What's your phone number? And so I give out my phone number and he's like, I'll text you tonight.
Yeah.
So I think I had dinner around 7 o'clock or something. So 9 p.m. or so, I already left. I was heading back home. I get a text saying something very similar to what your guy was saying, which was
he's like, bro, married with 2 kids. No.
Yeah, this guy was saying to me, my bed's ready.
You wanna watch a movie?
he was saying that my bed's ready.
Oh my god!
I had some fun with you at the dinner.
Oh my god!
Yeah, if you want to come and continue our conversation,
not the kind of fun.
And I was like, whoa! How did we jump here so quickly?
Block? How about block?
Block? No, first I had to say to him, how do we get here so quickly?
Right. So you were still interested?
No. I had to understand how do we get here so quickly because me when something happens, I want to understand where did I go wrong?
All right, right.
Should I have
learning? Yeah,
should I have set a boundary much earlier?
Okay.
Should I have seen some signs that I didn't see?
Mm. Were you drinking?
Nah.
Okay, right.
I just had a normal dinner.
Were you drinking?
Nah. So yeah, so when you're telling your story, that's how my story can relate.
Oh my god.
So
I think that's where you're saying boundaries, understanding where the boundaries should be. And I tried to set the boundary. It was in like a public place. But, you know, maybe I should have actually Googled his phone number first before I actually picked the place.
If you Googled his phone number, what are you hoping to find from that?
See whether something
it's
comes
connected
up.
To something, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this time it was. It was all these classified, all these male escorts.
Oh, he was an
escort. Well, he was an escort. But, you know, if you want a good time, ring this number.
So then, okay, there's a lot of people go to that. Maybe he runs a platform where male escorts come through.
Maybe.
Well, anyways, if you wanted a good time, you didn't want to, and you look, it's your loss.
Lost nothing, man. Lost nothing at all, bro. Lost nothing at all. So I think this was a big, yeah, you know, yeah.
So bringing it back to topic, because we were talking early on about boundaries. I think boundaries. That's the last topic. So
yes, it was.
You described yourself as being this nice guy and always there, ready to help. Mm. And we also understood that being a nice guy and always being ready to help without any sense of boundaries could be detrimental to your own mental health.
Can be.
And you could end up compromising on things you never wanted to compromise on in a, on the process of trying to help somebody else. Is that that's the thing, right?
Yep, yep.
You believe you're with me on that one?
Yep.
And so if somebody was watching right now, especially the fact that you speak to a lot of young people, a young person watching right now saying, "Hey Wayne, I've got the same struggle where I'm overly nice, overly give, overly there for people, and I always feel like they're backstabbing me or I'm getting the worst end of the stick." What advice would you give to that young person?
I actually think the young person's wise, I feel they need to be able to explore some mental exercises and workshops. So say, for example, okay, if you are put into these kind of positions, A, would you do this? B, would you do that? C, would you do that? Like, I don't know. What's an example? Okay, we'll take this example. Like, you know, there was a teenager that was thrown into the Forest Lake. You know Forest Lake?
Which forest? The one in Brisbane here.
Forest Lake. Did you hear this? Did you hear about this two, three weeks ago? No, there was a teenager that was in a school uniform that's thrown straight into the lake.
As they were bullying him and they threw him to the lake?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, like, obviously you've never felt, you know, those teenagers wouldn't have experienced that before. There was persons recording them. You can see the person get thrown in the lake and the before and after kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes teenagers, I feel, need a bit of muscle memory, mind muscle memory, to practice what they need to do in exceptional circumstances. So, for example, like you're learning to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
You would learn how to use the brakes appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't just slam on the brakes and just, okay, good luck to whoever's behind, I turn now.
Yeah.
So you cruise to a comfortable stop without taking too much space and things like that. So that's the mind muscle memory. And I feel like we should be exposing these teens into these challenging scenarios and get them to practice. And so, for example, like in a case where, okay, they may be offered, you know, alcohol or drugs. I was reading the Facebook post just now before coming to the show.
Yeah.
And it was a 16-year-old having a birthday party two suburbs over in Corinda.
Yeah.
And somebody was mentioning, hey, you know, the girl went to a private school. They actually were doing drugs, doing alcohol, had pocket knives and kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, bro, as a parent, this is scary.
Yeah.
Why are the kids doing this? Why? Why are they doing drugs? Where's their happiness?
Yeah.
Why do they need to carry knives for? Who's going to challenge them? Or why do they need alcohol? And I think this is the problem is that, let's go back to what we're talking about, is I feel we should be putting these teenagers, these youth, into these situations. I feel like we need to be exposing these teenagers and youth into these challenging circumstances, but practice their response. No, it's okay, I don't feel like drinking, but it's okay that you guys can have a good time, but I will choose not to drink, and thank you for giving me the respect to not encourage me kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the more you practice those difficult situations, the easier will come to you.
Correct, correct.
What do you feel about that?
100% agree with what you're saying. But as you're speaking, not even but, and to add on to that, because I 100% agree with what you're saying, because practice gets them used to the situation, knowing how to deal with peer pressure. If you don't know how to deal with peer pressure when it comes, you might be swapped away by it. And on top of that, I also feel that many of the youth aren't rooted in anything.
Exactly. Right? They follow. They're like sheep. They feel like sheep. Like, correct. You know, that's how many people has TikTok? Like, you know, in another example, like TikTok-wise, like I know someone who is studying a health science, pregnant at the moment. She understands a lot about medications because she's studying towards that, but she has sort of chosen not to get the vitamin K injection. She's pregnant. So usually if you're pregnant and you deliver a baby, the babies usually get immunized with Hep B and vitamin K. So vitamin K is just a vitamin, slows down bleeding risk, so the chance of death is lower kind of stuff. But I think she's seen so much TikTok videos that she has now the ideation of maybe I shouldn't have a vitamin K injection. It's like, bro, you're studying you're studying to be a pharmacist. Let's look at the data instead of following TikTok.
This is when it gets crazy because as a young person.
Can I tell another story?
Yes, I'll bring you back to the story. Let me just say this one point. As a young person, where do you get your information from?
Exactly. Where do you get the information from as a young person? To us, it was textbooks. To us, it was the encyclopedia. It was the World Book Encyclopedia. So there was like, you know, back in those days when we were young, it was a 20-volume Encyclopedia Britannica. And that was the king of information. There was no Wikipedia. There was no internet at that time.
You actually used to read that?
Huh?
Encyclopedia. You used to open it up and actually read it?
Oh, I got bored when I was a kid. I actually got the dictionary out. And I was actually started from A.
Yeah.
I wrote the word and I wrote the explanation. And I got up to like F or G.
No way, man.
You didn't do that as a kid?
I used to play with dictionary games, but not going
through. No, I was writing it out. So even like campanology. Campanology. I remember this one.
Things down.
I remember this one. Campanology. What is campanology?
What does it mean?
It's a study of bells.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
I hope that's right.
Oh, it's on camera. Someone's going to comment on the comment section. No.
I hope that's lying. Right. Well, we were bored. Like, there was nothing to do. There was no internet. There was no Game Boy.
Or you play sports. If you're not too sporty.
No. We were chasing chickens in the backyard. That was the best of it.
Okay.
That was our childhood. So there was nothing. But these days, I really feel sorry for these young ones because they have so many distractions. They've got a mobile phone. They've got social media. They've got Instagram. They've got TikTok. They've got Facebook. What else do they have? So you're bombarded with all this information. And now there's the dead internet theory. You heard of that one?
No. Please tell me.
1/3 of most responses of any forums are actually done by AI.
Yeah, AI is responding to everything. It's getting annoying.
Have you heard of CloudBot? CloudBook?
Yes, this CloudBot.
CloudBook? Have you heard of CloudBook?
CloudBot, yes. CloudBook, no.
So Facebook is for people.
Correct.
CloudBook is for AI bots.
Yes, okay. You know, a friend of mine told me about this. Yeah, I think I know where he's going.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So there's so much information, as you're saying. There's so much information. I really feel that we need to impart some stable knowledge to these youth so they can actually make generous choices and suitable choices to involve in society.
And that's why I was adding on top of what you spoke about earlier on, because being able to say no only works if you're rooted in something.
And you believe in yourself. And you have to believe in yourself that you actually have the power to say no.
Correct.
I think the people feel judged when they say no, or maybe they feel belittled, or they feel jested, or, you know, things that kids do.
And a lot of the youth that I've spoken to who have gotten into trouble, especially in the justice system, they usually say
they're not respected.
Yes. I heard one guy say to me that I didn't really believe in anything, so anything anybody offered me, I would just say yes. And that was a bit sad because...
That is sad.
What he said to me, he's like, look, like, my parents were doing everything, so I had no limitation on what I should do, what's the right or wrong. There was no moral, like, there was no nothing. So I didn't believe in God, I didn't believe in anything. So
I agree with that. Like, monkey see, monkey do. And I'm not being racist or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if your parents did this all along, you would do the same thing all along. It's just the way that you know, because your mind muscle memory. All you know.
Yeah.
Your mind muscle memory is reinforced.
Unless we're educating them.
Exactly. And I think this is where the society needs to come together and actually have more opportunities to tell them from what should be is the social norms, as opposed to what the radical ideas on TikTok and Instagram can be. Like, it's hard, man.
Yeah. And I agree with a lot of points that you're adding on. In your childhood, because you're so passionate about youth, I wanted to touch on your own childhood. How was your own childhood?
You had a good childhood? It was pretty interesting. My childhood was pretty interesting. Like, you know, my parents were actually divorced when I was young, so 5, 6 years old. When I was 6, 7, and my sister was only 3. And we were poor. We were broke. Like,
No way.
Boat people. What do you mean? No way. We were boat people. You know boat people?
For real.
I'm being legit.
Yeah, right.
So we were boat people. Like, back in those days, my grandpa was very, well, not really rich, but comfortable enough. Mm-hmm. I had, 12 aunties and uncles, mm-hmm. and they actually had a grocery store. They had 4 helpers, mm-hmm. maids.
Yeah,
they actually helped Kate, take care of all the kids.
Yeah,
and so when they came, when we came over to escape the war, mm-hmm. we had to leave everything behind. Mm-hmm. So we had 14 people, 16 people living in one house, in 2 stories.
Wow.
Tiny. So my grandparents was sleeping in the bedroom, mm-hmm. and my sister would be left-hand side,
yep.
and I would be on the right-hand side. And this was until, I was 14. Mm. I didn't have a room.
Wow.
We were legitimately boat people. We had to work hard.
Yeah.
So all we knew was working hard. Never saw my parents, so I guess we don't – me and my dad, I'm 45, 46 now.
Yeah.
And I've never celebrated – okay, I take that back. Not that I've never celebrated my birthday with my dad, but I've only celebrated once in my 46 years, my birthday with dad.
Crazy.
It's just different. And I really in the sense that we were born from Asian parents, we recognize we have a family unit. We don't have the empathy or the Caucasian way of seeing it. And I really think that, oh, my God, my wife does an amazing job for bringing our 2 kids up with that Caucasian sentiment. Love you, Dad. Love you, Mom. Have a good night. Have a good day at school, kind of stuff. And that's beautiful because I never had that as a kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
as a kid, how did that feel?
Like, I feel like it was really thrown in your face as a kid. When we were growing up, it was throwing. We didn't really belong to our grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
The grandparents were just trying to do the best that they can,
mm-hmm.
But they did much. But then sometimes, obviously, being kids, obviously, we sometimes piss off the grandparents, and then they'll throw it in your face, your parents don't even want you, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that bites hard. That bites hard. So, it does bite hard when you say something like that. And I think this is the thing, teens get brought up with this, sometimes these negative thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and it carries on.
Yeah.
It carries on. You're never good enough. You're not good enough. You fail school so much? There's mind, muscle, memory. I feel, and I really believe the mind, muscle, memory is so strong, mm-hmm. that they've connected to that, and they believe in that what the parents are saying. Because who else are they going to believe? As you're saying,
yeah.
Who else can they believe?
Yeah.
So if they believe in the parents saying that you're never good enough, who's going to tell them that you are good enough?
Mm. What does that do to a kid like that?
Exactly. What does it do to a kid like that? So I think it's good that people like myself would need to overcome that kind of dissociation from what has been told,
mm-hmm.
and move to a more positive side of life.
Well, how did you overcome it?
It's only recently, eh?
Wow.
I think it's only recently where I've connected the dots. Like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
About 15, 16 years ago. Back in those days, 15, 16 years ago, I had 2, 3 mortgages.
Yeah.
I had a car, had family. I thought it was okay. I was doing well.
Yeah.
And then something sort of happened to my registration. And so I was left with $10,000 of commitments per month.
Yeah.
And because I couldn't work as a pharmacist anymore,
mm-hmm.
It got really tough. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
$10,000 is a lot to cover per month without having a job.
That's crazy.
So my wife was still, I think at the time my wife was working. No, she was on maternity leave.
Wow.
So she was on maternity leave. My youngest was only 3 months old and I wasn't able to work. And it got really, really bad. Like, it was really depressing. And, like, I was doing Uber. I was trying to find out ways to try to make money.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Grow fish. Hoping my fish would actually multiply quick enough to get my $10,000. Never happened. Obviously, the fish doesn't grow that fast.
Yeah.
I even applied for jobs. Like, you know, go to the jobs for Woolworths. I applied for Woolworths. But you know what Woolworths said to me?
What did it say?
So I applied for Woolworths.
You're not qualified?
Yes.
Ah, child.
They said to me, like, okay, you know, pharmacy, like, you know, I'm sure I pretty can scan barcodes, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Their wording was, we found someone more suitable for the job than you are. Bro, I've got 15 years as a pharmacist. And you're telling me that I don't have the expertise or any transferable skills? That was hard, man. That was hard.
Mm.
But I think that was, it was so difficult. I think the thing it was like, yeah, during that time it was so difficult because I had so much pressures going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I lost the ability to work. Sorry.
Yeah.
I lost my ability to work and the money still was coming out and we were meeting the monthly payments. So I had to call the bank and say, look, hey, I don't have money to pay you. Like, yeah, I didn't have any money at all. And it got really dark. It got really, really dark.
Wow.
Like to the point that I was thinking of ending it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really, really bad.
So how did you come out of it? Because right now.
Oh, my God. It took so many years. Like, you know, during that time, I guess there were so many pressures, financial pressures. Mm-hmm. You didn't see the end of the light?
Yeah.
You couldn't see at the end of the light then? And it was, and you always thought that there was something wrong with you. Like, why am I feeling depressed about the circumstances? And it took me 3 years, 3 years to work out. There was actually nothing wrong with me. Wow. 3 years, 3 years. I was looking for an answer for 3 years. I was reading books, I was seeing psychologists, I was doing a lot to try, and it was tough because I guess, like, you can see, everyone else
mm-hmm.
moves along with their world, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they carry on with their lives, they go to work, but then you're sitting at home, can't do anything, you don't have any skills, words has said no to you. What do you do? And to get back to like $10,000 a month, you can't just step into something and just try to make that $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
Like I tried to be a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, okay, well, I'll sign in with a real estate agent, pay the $770, mm-hmm. did a 6-week course, maybe a 3 days course or something like that. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, there's 200, 300 houses getting sold.
Yeah.
Per month. I just need to take 5 or 10 of them. So the probability wasn't that bad. But it was during the time where I didn't believe in myself and I had to door knock every single house. Like, door knocking is hard, man.
Yeah.
I have so full respect of people who sit in shopping centres and try to sell something. Mad respect, man. I cannot do that.
Sales is crazy.
Sales is crazy because, like, during that point in time, it's like, oh, my God, I'm knocking on all these doors, but you don't get pleasant ones sometimes. It's like, fuck off. That kind of, can I swear?
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really rough. But, you know, 3 years, I was lost for 3 years. And I was listening to all these TED Talks, all these self-improvement books. I was trying to work out what was wrong. And it all made sense one day to me. It took me years, but it made sense. So what really made sense to me was that I think it might, like, the way that how it all made sense was, okay, I'm talking to you now. The brain is designed to take in input from the visual, from the sounds. So, okay, I'm talking to you now. There may be something, a patter on the roof. So if there's a patter on the roof, then your brain tries to work out what it is. In times of depression, anxiety, you try to work out what's wrong, but you never find it. So you're looking for something, but it's not there. Does that make sense?
You're looking for something, but it's not there.
You think there's something wrong with you, but you can't work out what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Is that because you're focusing on the wrong thing to begin with? Or is that because of what you said early on, that what was taught to you from a childhood?
I think in more lines of like linking it all up together.
Yeah.
Because what I used to believe was, okay, you have two hands, two legs, two eyes, a nose, a mouth, a brain. That's you. That's one you. So your thoughts is one. But what if I tell you now that you can tell your brain how to feel and how to think and how to act and how to respond? Is that weird? Or is empowerment? To me, it's empowerment now. Because say, for example, like, you know, you drive on the motorway. Motorways, right? It's cool, eh? So, okay, someone cuts into you, your lane. You react by being aggressive. And this is what I heard is from one of the TED Talks. No one's injected you with this anger. Why do you choose anger? So if you can choose to be angry, why can't you choose not to be angry? Does that get it?
It's a choice.
It's a choice. Does it make sense?
It does.
So I guess, like, when you realize all the thing that you feel that is wrong and depressed about, and you're trying to work out why you're depressed, is trying to understand that maybe you're not depressed.
And choose something else.
And choose something else.
Yeah. Now I'm catching on to you because if a child grows up in a family and from a young age, the parents have always told the kid, you're dumb. Feeling dumb is the norm to them. They're not dumb. That's not reality. Exactly. It's feeling dumb becomes what's familiar because that's what's been bestowed to them, and then they've adopted that identity. And sometimes I even remember in my stages of depression is that feeling depressed is what you thought you're supposed to carry in that season.
Exactly. Like, or maybe that was the case. Like, you know, when you feel depressed wise, you feel that you are that person because you know you're depressed, you feel depressed, and your doctor tells you you're depressed.
Yeah, and your whole environment seems to be supporting
the information, all the information that comes through is supporting your thoughts.
Correct.
So they actually did a study, like I was reading a study 3 months ago, and they were saying that sometimes the mental health diagnoses are more of a hindrance than it is beneficial.
I
shouldn't really talk about this too much because, like, you know, health professional-wise, there is definitely merit in medications, but I'm just trying to give a different kind of approach to go with medications.
Well, I don't think you're too far from it. Like, even the concept of the placebo.
Well, that's what CBT.
The placebo effect. That's what it is. What's the placebo? You can explain it in much better form. I know.
Okay, placebo effect. Okay, you ready? You ready for this one? Okay, placebo effect. I was reading the articles, right? Okay, placebo effect. So, yeah, I think this is the thing. It's trying to take it back to what we're talking about, depression and kind of stuff, is like when people feel depressed, they feel hopeless. There's nothing going for them. But what I want to try to get people to understand is, as you said, you have a choice. And that's not gaslighting people.
mm-hmm.
but it's showing how strong the brain can become.
Correct.
Or how strong the thoughts can become.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, okay, there is a sleeping tablet called Belsomra.
Mm-hmm.
So in clinical trials, there might be like a couple of hundred that take the sugar tablet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of hundred that take the active tablet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a sleeping tablet, so it should get you to sleep faster.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sugar tablets arm, on a couple of hundred, the average peer person went to sleep 22 minutes faster on a sugar tablet.
Yeah.
Why does that happen?
It's all thoughts.
It's all thoughts.
Yeah.
So the active arm was 27 minutes faster. I don't quote me on the numbers, but yeah. it's around that. Like,
yeah.
if a placebo wasn't working or cannot work, why did it have such a great effect? Right? So I guess what we're trying to say is, like, you know, mm-hmm. through the depths of despair, if we can give people hope,
mm-hmm.
keep people vision,
mm-hmm.
give them their necessities like food, shelter,
mm-hmm.
Community is a really, really big one. I'm a big fan of Johann Hari.
Yeah.
I'm a very big fan of Johann Hari. And Johann Hari, you ever heard of him?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, haven't you? TED Talk, 50 minutes. I love listening to a lot of TED Talks. But mm-hmm. he's basically was saying, like, he was a journalist. He traveled all around the world to find out why people were depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And this story, 50 minutes, resonated with me quite a bit. So he was telling the story about how a farmer,
mm-hmm.
He was tilling the fields and blew one of his legs off.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously if you have a leg blow off, get a prosthetic or something like that, mm-hmm. you're in the water all the time, then it gets really, really hard. Your feet swell and you get, you know, it's really, really hard to work. And he got sad about it
mm-hmm.
because at one, he was experienced difficulty. By the other time, he was afraid of his other leg getting blown off.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to see his doctor. And the story continues that he went to see a doctor. So in our society, we just give him an antidepressant.
Correct.
Right? But what they gave him was a cow.
Yeah, right.
So in this case, the cow was the antidepressant.
Mm.
The reason why they gave him a cow was that instead of actually tilling the fields, right, he was able to milk the cow to make the money himself. So he didn't have to be in the fields. So if you remove – so I guess like in comparison terms
mm-hmm. –
why are we in the society
mm-hmm.
staying in a job where we're depressed at and take an antidepressant?
Just get out of that job.
Get out of the job.
It sounds so logical for
real. It sounds illogical, but because I think the society pressures that, okay, how am I going to find another job?
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to take before I find another job?
Mm-hmm.
I still have my weekly payments to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where people need to realize the power of community and the power of networking
mm-hmm.
is that if you start networking, I used to think it's brown nosing, like when I was like immature teen years, like early years, I thought it was brown nosing, like, why are you sucking up to people? But it's not. It's community. It's growing a community.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of you finding that job or finding a solution to an answer, mm-hmm. a question, you have 20 people that will find the answer for you.
Beautiful. Well said.
You agree?
Yes, 100%. Community is key, man.
Community is key.
No man is an island.
It's like, Joel, how's you going today? Or, okay, if Joel doesn't show up next week, hey, Joel, how are you going?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we're missing a lot.
We're in missing society. A lot.
Everybody's, like, I struggled a lot when I came to Australia because I came here as a teenager and
did
it was,
you?
Yeah, it was tough because all my friends wanted to go outside and play. They all wanted to go inside and go on an Xbox. And I was like, bruv, let's get outside, man. Where's the community?
Oh, wow.
Everybody wanted to be online. I wanted to be interacting with people. That's what I wanted to do.
And I think there's a thing, like, your childhood memories. Like, my happiest childhood memories was about my grandma.
Mm.
My grandma, every Sunday, should be cooking, like, 3-4 course, like, plenty of food
mm-hmm.
for the whole family to come in. All my aunties and uncles will come and we'll have a good time just having a chat with each other,
mm-hmm.
just bullshitting, really, but you're just having a chat and just interacting with community. But it's now that my grandma's passed away.
Everyone's just separated.
Everyone's just separated.
Yeah. No wonder why life is depressing for most, because we're all trying to be an island, right? You're trying to carry every burden to yourself. You're trying to,
Johann Hari puts it best, I feel.
What does it say?
He said, we are designed in the community mm-hmm. to actually disassociate from one each other as a species.
What do you think about that?
Say that again.
We are, I think, this is words.
Yeah.
We are designed, mm-hmm. society is designed in a manner
mm-hmm.
that we are the first species mm-hmm. to dissociate and disband one another.
What did you get from that?
I think he's right. I think he's right. So, you know, if grocery's gone through the roof, housing's gone through the roof, two peoples have to work hard. We don't have time for family anymore, do we? So who's looking after the kids? Who's teaching the, who's mentoring these kids? Who's teaching these kids?
Yeah.
So I feel like somebody needs to step up.
It's hard, man, because the you're living in a world of survival.
It's a survival. And as you said, there's so much information out there. What's right, what's wrong? They don't know yet. We don't know yet. Like most people don't can't even tell the difference between AI and not AI.
Let alone.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy out there.
It's crazy out there. Like there was a beautiful piece that was done in AI. And then it mm-hmm. was like Kanye West singing a beautiful Chinese song in perfect Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had like, you know, Kim Kardashian in it, Snoop Dogg was in it. I think it was called Kanye East, was the Instagram thing.
People believed it.
Oh, it looked pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
It looked pretty cool. Like, obviously, there's no chance that it was going to happen. Yeah. But like the technology these days, I feel, is overused. And I feel, as you said, we need to go back and build a community because we need to be able to understand what the society is
mm-hmm.
and how society should be.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone can be happy. Honestly, everyone should be happy. Why can't we all be happy?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Why can't we all be happy? What would you say to somebody that says, oh, well, I can't be happy until I find my perfect partner. I can't be happy until I make $1 million.
Mm.
I can't be happy until I buy this particular property.
That's right.
What would you say to those who are thinking like that?
And I think this is the thing, like live in the now. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Live in the now. Take the opportunities. And I think this is where it's a catch-22. The more that people isolate themselves
mm-hmm.
because they're so busy with life,
mm-hmm.
the more isolated they become and the more comfortable they are being isolated
mm-hmm.
and they're more tepid to come to the first step. We need to make that easier.
Mm. And what's your solution?
Well, that's what Happiness Hangout is about.
Well, tell us about Happiness Hangout.
Well, that's what Happiness Hangout is about. It's like, you know, trying to, like, you know, my wife reckons because we had this childhood that wasn't really fun kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She reckons this man cave kind of hangout that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've got, like, you know, discos, poker table, basketball, Lego, painting,
mm-hmm.
podcast rooms. We got everything here. Like, we've got racing swims as well. Like,
mm-hmm.
if we're trying to show kids can be kids, to enjoy kids' life,
mm-hmm.
we should also be able to let adults be kids mm-hmm. and enjoy life as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Happiness Hangout is about, is like, you know, getting people together, socializing again, like having fun. Don't worry about what's about life. Don't worry about the pressures of life. Live in the moment for a couple of hours. Be a kid again. That's what I think.
Be a kid again. You talked about your early journey and your childhood, the difficult time you went through with your license, coming out of depression.
That was hard. Now
you talk about living in the now and being happy.
I think this is the thing, like, my really dream is mm-hmm. to give people and make them feel empowered for thoughts, mm-hmm. empowered of decisions, empowered of awareness of their senses.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, like, instead of being one and your body telling you that you have to feel depressed,
mm-hmm.
you have to feel anxious, you have mm-hmm. to feel not worthy, why can't we tell our brain to think otherwise? Like, here's one for you. Mm-hmm. I was driving to work one day,
mm-hmm.
and I got a phone call from my friend and said, "Look, have you at the warehouse? They hang out. Did you see this?"
Yeah.
And your brain starts to think of where this thing can be, right?
Yes.
Like he needs to find it. He needs to find it.
Yeah.
And then your brain just starts to think, okay, was it here? Was it there? Was it upstairs? Was it downstairs? And then you think of it so many times during that 5 minutes that then you don't know whether those suggested places was actual places or not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, your brain just...
So your brain can't differentiate between was that a real memory
mm-hmm.
or was it now a placed memory?
Imagined memory, yeah.
So why can't we use that kind of thoughts process and gaslight ourselves to being happy?
Well, we already do it to make ourselves sad.
Exactly. We already do it to make ourselves sad. So why don't we use it for our own benefit?
There's a man that says, he says, imagination creates reality. And
true.
He said the most important component of human existence is imagination.
I love that.
And there's a guy by the name of Neville Goddard. He's like nice. A mystic. He talks a lot about using imagination to be able to live the reality you want to live in this life. And he says, knowing how to utilize your imagination and the things you imagine. Because if your brain can imagine good just as bad as it can imagine bad, you have a choice now. You can imagine the good thing or you can imagine the bad things.
Agreed.
You imagine the bad things and...
Exactly. But just as an example, like, you know, mm-hmm. during, like, every year, like, you know, mm-hmm. you have a birthday every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the preceding 2-3 days or even a week beforehand, you start to feel happy.
So true.
Don't you?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. Do you? That's actually funny.
Do you? Because then what I think is mm-hmm. what's happening is that it is your birthday. In the past, you've always had presents. You've always had family. You've always had gifts and you've always had a happy time. So your brain has remembered all these years that you've had your birthday. You've had such an amazing time that your brain is anticipating a happy time again on your birthday.
And you get happy even a week before. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with like Christmas and
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Same as Christmas, right?
Yeah.
So if your brain can anticipate that and make you feel happy, why can't it do it for you the rest of the other days of your life?
We've never practiced that.
That's the thing.
That's the problem there.
That's the thing. What do you think?
I think you hit the jackpot. Boom. Boom.
What do you think? What do you think about that? It's a wild theory. Yeah. It's a wild theory, but what if?
Well,
because placebo can make you feel happy, or placebo can make you feel better. It's
practice now.
It's practice. So I think this is like a Hugh Van Hollenberg. You heard of Hugh Van Hollenberg?
No, please tell me about it.
Resilience Project. So he talks about the Resilience Project. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, he used to be a teacher, had hardships about being a teacher. He went to the third world country. And he met Stunzen. Stunzen was 7-8 years old or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so happy. Stunzen was so happy
mm-hmm.
to show this teacher from Australia going over there. It was a broken swing.
Mm.
The teacher was thinking, who can volunteer about himself? Like the teacher thinks that, oh my God, I don't have the heart in me to tell him that your swing is broken and we're better in Australia.
Yeah.
But yet he was so Stunzen was so happy still over a broken swing. We have everything here.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we still so sad?
Only if I get one more thing, then I'll be happy.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is pretty sad. When you've been an amazing guest on this podcast, you've
spoken. Oh my God, is that it?
See? That's what was I telling you, man? The hour goes quick, man.
Oh, that's fast, eh?
Hey.
We should do it again, man. We should do this again. This is fast.
Yeah, the hour goes super, super quick.
That's an hour.
I'm pretty sure we went past the hour. Yeah. How do we do, Raymond? How many minutes? We go past an hour? Yeah, we passed an hour. Long time ago. And this is like... This is the third shot as well. He stopped a couple of times. So we went past now a long time ago. But now, the stuff you spoke about in the podcast, your story you shared, the experiences you have, the questions you're asking around happiness. To me, that's the stuff that stood out. The questions you're asking around happiness. Why aren't we?
It is, why aren't we? And I think that's valid questions. So like if people don't feel that they have the capability to feel happy, let's look at a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at a different way. because everyone should be able to feel happy. I don't know. Like some people go to some people say, look, hey, I'll never be happy. I'll never be happy. I find it interesting.
Let me end with this last question because I think I've also heard a lot of gurus talk on happiness, and they always say happiness is something that's fleeting.
I reckon you can actually make it permanent. I don't know, man. Through my 3 years of despair that I lost 3 years of, I'm in such a okay space now. I can't say it's always great, but I don't have any low days. I don't have any low days at all. Like even anxiety. I used to have anxiety all the time during those 3 years. Worried about this, worried about that. What if I'm doing the right thing, what if I'm doing the wrong thing? Where I'm getting my money from. I haven't had any problems with anxiety for the last 10 years now because I've started to understand how the brain works and why it's a warning signs and that it's not staying with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you can tell your brain that, okay, like, you know, even doing a podcast like this, like it's something new, start to get butterflies, like your brain starts to think and guess what's going to happen in this podcast, that kind of stuff. And your brain starts to, your heart starts to race, your stomach starts to turn. You just have to tell your brain, hang on, I know you're predicting. Lisa Filman Barrett, she's amazing. She's a neuroscientist. It's all about emotions, about all the predictions. So you just need to tell the brain, hey, hang on. You don't need to make me feel this way because I know I'm going to an unfamiliar environment. Stand down.
I'm safe. Yeah.
I'm safe. I'm safe. Back in those days, it's different. Like, you know, if you see a shadow in the corner in the caveman days, you run. It's a flight or fight response. You run because that shadow could be a lion that's going to eat you up.
Yeah.
Not now. You just have to say, look, hang on. I'm familiar with the situations. I won't be eaten by a lion. I don't think I'll be eaten by a lion. I should be okay. And that kind of things that if you work through and with the brain empowerment and the mind empowerment, you can do anything. It's connecting those wires. It's connecting those thoughts. It's connecting it to the way that you tell it, the story that you want to tell it.
Yeah.
Don't let the brain override that and don't let it dictate to you what you should be feeling. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but, you know, it's good for me.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to think of life like that anymore as whether stuff are right or wrong much. I think everything comes down to perspective, and especially when it comes to people that want results, right? I like people that want results. People that like arguing, you guys can argue in the comment section.
Exactly.
But people that like results, exactly. These are the people where your message really stands out.
Exactly.
These are the people that are struggling, people that are sitting down with 2-3 mortgages and are unhappy. These are the people that don't know what the next step is.
We've been there. But have, as you said, results. Have the solutions.
Correct.
Okay, you're dealing with financial adversity. You can still access help. Call the bank up and say, look, hey, can you put my mortgage on hold for 12 months? Do it. Don't worry about your credit rating. It's not like you're going to buy a house again in the next 15, 20 years. It's no big deal. You just catch up on the mortgages later. Or you know, your electricity. Like if you can't afford your electricity, call Origin up so they can't afford it. They'll put you in a payment plan. Or if you're actually 25% or over of your expense versus income, you get $1,000 wiped every year. Did you know that?
I didn't know.
Yeah. So there is means to it. But I think that as a community, we need to be vulnerable and say, look, I need help.
Yeah.
Because if you're not asking for help, who knows that you're needing help?
You know, there's a lot of shame in asking for help.
Hey?
That's what I hear a lot. There's a lot of shame in asking
for
help.
That's the thing. We need to change that narrative. We need to change that narrative. There shouldn't be any shame in asking for help. Having said that, like, again, boundaries. Asking for boundaries is like, you know, help is good, what you can afford or what you can actually help with. But yeah, there's means.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. Adding to your early message about results and stuff, I was wanting to also emphasize on the fact that the stuff that you're speaking on this podcast, this might not be valuable to the person who's looking for an argument, but to someone who's been to where you've been, who is currently still in that situation, who is still struggling, who's got kids, got a mortgage, can't be happy, is pursuing to get a better life. To that person, this message is heaven. This message is the one thing they needed to hear.
I think it is. Like, you know, like you get so overwhelmed with the society. You get overwhelmed with, okay, what I'll do now, what I know. You get frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, shame.
Mm.
I didn't have the guts to tell my family that I didn't, well, my extended family, what was happening.
Yeah.
I didn't have the guts to tell any my friends that I lost my job.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Tell everyone that you have. Be vulnerable, but be honest. Don't cry for help and ask for everything because you have nothing. But ask for help so people can help you, so you can help yourself. Does it make sense?
Yes. Adding on top of that, should we tell everyone or should we tell the people we trust?
I think tell everyone. What's tell everyone to which you, that you think will be willing to help you.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess you're right. Yeah. Like, you find trust.
Because not everybody's trying to see you succeed.
Mm.
And not everybody's is praying for your blessing. Some people are praying for your downfall.
I see.
And so I would assume that you have to still have to, a little bit of wisdom and know, okay, here's the people that I can tell because they will help me.
Mm.
And these are the people that I trust.
Mm.
So Wayne, as we're coming to the end of this podcast, what message would you leave to anybody that listened to your message today about happiness, message to, about resilience?
I think don't look too far. As you said, don't look too far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look for the happiness. Be content that you are happy. This is the great conversation. Like, to me, mm-hmm. talking to people, like, loneliness epidemic is really real.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're saying that if you feel lonely, it's equivalent to smoking 17 cigarettes a day.
Yeah.
Did you hear that one?
Chalubo.
17 cigarettes a day. So you have these heart effects because you're lonely. Reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Be a community.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Beautiful. We'll end with that lovely message from Wayne here. Wayne, thank you again for being a guest.
No, thanks, Joel. Thank you for your time. This has been great.
Podcast. I'm sure
we're going to have.
Yeah, 100%. We'll do. We're going to get tons of conversation happening. There's a lot of topics we didn't even get to touch. And I'm sure we'll do another episode. We'll sit down, talk about it. There's a lot of things to be solved in the community. There's a lot of help that people need.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Messages like this is what's going to change the community.
Yeah.
And so if you're watching this and you want to be a guest at the Discover You podcast, please go ahead and reach out at admin@realitycreationtv.com or reach out to me through my social media, Joel Bonisha. And or through the page, even at the Discover You podcast page on Instagram, on YouTube,
come join us
on Facebook. Yeah, and if you wanna join us and you have some skills, we need people doing more help with the social media, doing more help in all the different departments, finding better guests, finding things, and you want to be a part of something bigger than yourself, reach out. We'd love to have you here at the 1645 Studio. Joel Bonisha here, the Discover You podcast. Wayne, I guess, for the day. Thank you very much. Peace out.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.